But there's something else. Those of you who know about Arthurian legends, and C.S. Lewis was a bit of an Arthurian scholar, will know that part of the Arthurian legends is the Fisher King, someone who has been wounded, and as he is wounded, his whole land is dying. In other words, Ransom calls together not only Christian ideals, but he brings in Arthurian legends. Indeed, in the person of Ransom, Lewis pulls together the full mythic weight of the scapegoat king and invests it with a historical reality. Ransom is a scapegoat both in the Christian and in the Arthurian sense. And of course, King Arthur is supposed to be a Christian king in some ways. Now, in Paralandra, Ransom quite literally becomes the Christ of Venus. He really becomes the Messiah of Venus. In that hideous strength, however, he is less a Christ figure and he is more Arthur the Pendragon, the great Christian king whose court of Camelot is the one shining light in a dark world. Now, we call it Camelot. Lewis always called it Logris, but it basically means the same thing for our purpose. In fact, as we analyze Ransom, the Pendragon, the leader of Logris, we discover, or Lewis tells us, that there is not one England, but there are actually two Englands. The first England is the unheroic nation of shopkeepers, and that's Britain. That's the, you know, people that just seek their creature comforts. But the second one is the heroic nation of poets, the England of Shakespeare and Chaucer. This is Logris. Now, we learn in the novel that Logris exists within Britain. In other words, the heroic England lives inside of the unheroic England, and the heroic England is ever waiting to break through and redeem Britain from her drunken sleep. See how Lewis not only puts it on a cosmological scheme, but on a sort of historical, eschatological scheme. And Lewis, I believe, would say that all countries have two countries within them. So Belbury is the bad England, if you will. St. Anne's is the good England. Here's another twist. The final redemption in that hideous strength, because don't worry, the good guys win. The redemption is heralded in the novel by the physical awakening and return of Merlin. Because some believe that not only is King Arthur asleep at Avalon waiting to return, but Merlin is also in a sleep. Actually, we find out that Arthur and Merlin are sleeping on Venus. Isn't that interesting? But anyway, Merlin is called back to life, and Ransom takes his dark earthy magic and channels it for good. You want to know something funny? Merlin is based on William Butler Yeats in the novel. Lewis actually says that. He patterned him after Yeats. Well, let's come to the end. The novel's strange title, That Hideous Strength, refers to the arrogance of the builders of the Tower of Babel. It comes from an old poem. And in the climax, Ransom, by the power of Merlin and the Oyarsa of Mercury, literally babbles the tongues of Belbury and ushers in their swift, bloody destruction. That Hideous Strength is maybe not a book for children, because the ending is very, very bloody. Because what happens is, when their languages are babbled, all of the Belbury people literally fall on each other and devour each other. It's a rather grotesque end, but Lewis wants to show how evil, in the end, devours itself. Again, this is a novel well worth reading. In fact, at the end of the novel, all of the planets actually descend and allow their virtues to help St. Anne to overcome the evil forces. So it's a truly cosmic ending. But I want to end on the note I began, and that's to tell you that for Lewis, the choices of ordinary individuals is what makes all the difference.